I'm a firm believer in that, God has gifted you something that is amazing that only you have, and you've got to share that with the world. You just have to. Even if you think I'm not creative or nobody wants to hear it, BS. Somebody out there is going to appreciate what you have to give. And I think that's like the rent we pay on this earth, is we have to participate. We have to. Like it makes the world a better place if we all do. It's just, it makes life less dreary, and like Bitcoiners are great at that. We find the courage to do it, right? Like my friend Sam made these shirts. They became a part of Bitcoin history. We'll always have the memories of the Satoshi shirts.
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Ivy Lumi. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe, comment, or leave a few sats in the link description or support our Noster profile. So today's guest is someone whose past weaved together music, storytelling, open networks, and Bitcoin in a way that feels incredibly natural, but yet very unreal. Heather Larson is the host of Radio Detox, a passionate supporter of independent creators, and someone who believes technology is ultimately about bringing people closer together. And most recently, she experienced something very few Bitcoiners ever do, participating in the mining of a Bitcoin block. And this happened very, very recently. Yes. So we'll be making sure to delve into the whole journey of that. What struck me the most about Heather isn't just how many different communities Heather is part of, but the common thread running through all of them, whether it's music, podcasting, Noster, or Bitcoin. She's consistently chosen participation over consumption. So today, I love to explore that journey. What curiosity has taught her? How open networks have changed the way she relates to people? What does it feel like to help mine a Bitcoin block, and where she sees the future of value for value, Noster, and the human side of the Bitcoin heading? Heather, welcome to Live with Bitcoin.
Thank you. Oh, Ivy, I'm so glad to be on with you. I'm a huge fan, and I'm so glad to be here today. We have a lot of work to do and so much to talk about, don't we?
Definitely. Just to jump right into it, it was just last week, you've experienced something very few people get to experience, which is participating in mining a Bitcoin block. Some people understand mining intellectually, some people do it professionally, but for most Bitcoiners, very few participated in this historical moment for a Bitcoiner. So tell us all about it. What surprised you the most about mining a Bitcoin block?
I think my reaction to it was like, we've been trying so hard and for so long. I work for Wrigley. We're a hash rate marketplace. We have been working for, well, let's see, I got hired around November of 2024. So since then, so like 19 months, we have spent doing what we call the block party. And it's where everybody joins in. You can purchase hash rate, or you can hook up a solo miner. You can hook up a farm. It doesn't matter. You just point your hash to our pool, or hash rate as it is. And we just try to get as many people involved. We try to get as much hash rate as we can. We try to get as many solo mining machines. So your BitAx, your Brains Miner, your Avalon, your Nerd Miners, just bring them, right? bring them in. And, we're just going to try as a group to solo mine together. So we've tried 28 times now. And on the 28th try on June 27th, 2026, number nerds, do the numerology or something for me, because it was incredible. We hit block 955703. And my reaction was like denial. I was in total shock. We were live on a Twitter space, me and one of my local friends from Arizona here, Sean. He's gotten into our mining party. So he thought, I'm going to host a live Twitter space. There will just come on and talk about mining. And like last week we did it too. And like a couple guys came on and talked about mining. And, talked about the party and like, hey, this is cool. Like, we're actually like making a difference. We're actually trying to hit a block together. We're trying to decentralize mining. We're trying to do our part as Bitcoiners, right? And so, like, we're just, me and Sean are just innocuous, like talking on this X space, Twitter space, whatever you want to call it. And I get a text message from our developer And I look at it and I'm like, he said, we got it. Like all caps, like we got it. And I'm like, no way. And so I look at the mempool, like I pull it up on my computer real quick. And I'm like, wait a minute, like two people just got a block. Like there was an unknown block. So I'm like, I don't know who that is. That could be anybody, right? That could be a small miner. It could be Foundry. We don't know. It's just unknown. And then I saw our pool. It said solo CK pool. And I'm like, there's no way. Do you know how many times we tried to do this? And I'm like, wait a minute. And my dev's like, no, we got it. I'm like, no, we didn't. I'm like total denial. So we start digging into, you know, the mempool. We start clicking into things. And I'm like, did we really just hit a block? And Sean's like, oh my God, it's solo CK pool. Like we hit a block. And everybody on the X space is like looking and go, oh my God, did you guys just hit a block? And then I look at the Telegram group and everybody's like, oh my God, is that us? Did we do it? And I'm like, my God, did we do it? Did we? No, we didn't. No, we didn't. And so like that was... You can hear the whole recording. It's hilarious because I was like, oh my God, it was probably
like, live, hey?
Yeah, it was my live reaction to hitting a block is captured forever on X. So I'm just, it's wow, funny now, but like I haven't listened back to the whole way through. It's out there. So if you want to hear my absolute denial, I think I even said that whenever something major happens in life that I go right to denial, right? If like, if there's grief, I go to the denial stage first. If something good happens, I'm like, that didn't happen. You know, that's just my brain. That's how I work. So I was just in shock. And so then we verify it. My dev's like, Jesus, Heather, we're like, we got it. We did it. So then, you know, word is spreading through our community because we have everything. We have X, we have Noster, we have Discord, we have Telegram. We, you know, wow. Everybody's all over. And so we're like, oh my God, we did this. And then the next question is, because if nobody understands, if no Bitcoiner understands Bitcoin mining, people really don't understand how you pay out the block reward. So that was the next question. They were like, whoa, when did we get our money? Because we had some people in there who had really put money into the process. And that's also what we do. The block reward shares are paid out based on hash rate contributed. So if you are a whale and you buy a ton of hash rate, you're going to get a fat reward. And so I think the biggest reward that we paid out was probably about equivalent to $25,000. That was not me. I had made a very small last minute purchase because I had been out late the night before with my Bitcoin friends. And I just kind of came home and like half awake, like, oh, I got to buy hash rate for the party in the morning because I'm going to oversleep and I'm going to miss the party start. So like I just hit the YOLO button on my browser and I was like, cool, about hash rate, you know, opened a wallet, made the purchase, didn't think about it. I bought like 42 terahash, you know, whatever it was. You know, I was like, I just have this ritual, right? Usually at the last minute, I buy the hash rate. So then, you know, like I know I'm not going to get a lot because I know that I didn't buy in. So like, I'm not like excited about the money aspect. I'm like, oh my God, what do we do next? Like, so everybody's like, well, when do we get our money? I'm like, okay, now we got to explain. Now that we've got people on board with understanding hash rate, understanding Bitcoin mining, understanding a solo miner, understanding how this whole gamification of the block party works, now I get to explain, and we hadn't done it before. We know how it works, but we hadn't done the payout before. So then everybody's like, when are we going to get our block reward share? And so we're like, okay, so now we got to do a little education here. Nobody goes through this, right? And then we had about 114 people who were part of the block party. So that's 114 people that had to get payouts. So nobody Bitcoiner really like knows that. A lot do, but you know, you don't know until it happens to you and you mine a block and it's like, okay, how do we do the rewards again? Well, you have to do 100 block confirmations, or, you know, that's like 15 or 17 hours, right? So roughly like 16 hours, provided every block takes 10 minutes. So you got to go through the confirmations. So after about 16 hours, we can pay out the reward. So everybody's like, whoa, where's my money? And they're like, hold on, like back to Bitcoin's perfect design. There is a 100 block rule. You know, so Bitcoin essentially teaches us low time preference in every way. Like even when you hit a block and you're waiting for that block reward, you see the Coinbase is there, you're like, oh, I got the block reward and I'm gonna get it in 16 hours because Bitcoin wants me to wait. You know, Satoshi designed this perfectly, so Bitcoin wanted us to wait. So we did that and we got through that, and that was incredible because somebody, not me, had to do all of those. Somebody had to sit there and look at the addresses and go, whoa, you know, like we got to pay these people now. So that was great that somebody else had to do that task, because that's not for me. I will talk about mining all day. Somebody else has to push the buttons, and thank God it's not me.
How did it work? Because you said you tried 28 times, like 29 times. When you organize a block party, do you target a specific block or every?
I wish. Yeah, everyone's tried to guess what block we would hit, like the whole way through. Like, I think there was a point where maybe we were doing a mining party around the time like block 888 would hit, and so like we were like, oh my god, wouldn't it be cool if that's the block we mined? So like they're impossible to target, right? Because sometimes they're TikTok next block every 10 minutes, and then sometimes you'll sit there for like 48 minutes, and that is so punishing when you have like an 8-hour block party and one of those hours is waiting for one block to clear, and we're just like, oh my god, like we wanted more chances to hit within this 8 hours and instead we just lost a whole hour to one block. Like, oh, painful. So we've definitely experienced like the downside like that. We've experienced like the hard times where we're like, man, this party setup was so great. Maybe the difficulty was low. Maybe we felt so optimistic, like we would hit a block. Maybe we had a ton of people involved, or maybe we just had a ton of hash rate because we had whale buys, which has happened as well. We mined one time with 7 exahash, which was huge, and didn't hit a block. So it's kind of impossible to target like a single block, and every party has been different. So like it's always a different amount of hash rate, it's a different amount of people, it's always a different vibe because people kind of come and go because it's got a community feel. It's like a party, you know, people come and go. Like sometimes people get really into it and they're with us for like a couple months and then they bounce. Maybe they move on to another pool, maybe they decide to put money into a miner, maybe they buy a more expensive miner. You know, like whatever, people come and go. And then we've got people who've been with us from the start because we started this with maybe a dozen people. And it was our founder, Evan's dream that, hey, if we all pull our hash rate, maybe we can mine a block, because like that's the hardest thing to do in Bitcoin. Right. So we've come from that far. We're just a 12 people or so. We're doing this to like we welcomed in just like hash rate buyers to buy hash rate, essentially buying entry into the party and, you know, the privilege of being able to try to hit the block and get that reward share, right? And then I don't even remember at what point it started, but we opened it up for solo mining machines. That was by popular demand. So our users give us feedback and everybody wanted to hook up these things. I've got one that's unplugged because I have this fantasy that I'm going to have time to clean it before the next block party. And so like we got so into these when we opened up solo mining. This came from Crypto Cloaks that we started something we called the Alliance. So these Alliance casings came from Crypto Cloaks. Shout out to Rick. So Rick at Crypto Cloaks came up with the Alliance. We had like an Alliance Noster account. Like we all got one of these. Like I bought this one. I tricked it out with a fan. And I gotta clean it up right now and put it back together and plug it back in time for the Saturday party, which, you know, anybody who mines in between parties can actually like maybe hit a block with a BitAx, and then you would get like one BTC, and then the rest is split based on hash rate contributed. Hard to hit a block with a BitAx, but it can be done.
How long have you been trying this? You had 12, a dozen people. Now how many? Mm-hmm. Now you have over 100 people participating in this very block. And how long does it take you to get to this point?
It took us a long time. Like we had a pause last fall. We had a technical issue, screwed something up, shut down for a few months and didn't do the party. So we probably lost some people there, and some came back too, because it is a community feel and a lot of people never left. And so now if you look at the party now, I think we've got more people. I think close to 400. If you look on the Wrigley website, which is like Wrigley, Wrigly.io, we've got a few hundred people, which is shocking to me because we've always been very small. And then our goal, which we made recently, was that we want to have 1,000 people join the party. That's our new goal. Let's get the community to 1,000 people joining the party on a weekly basis. Is that's another thing we did last month. We decided that it would be a weekly party. Instead of like we were doing bi-weekly, like we have tried so many things to get to where we are. We just kept reiterating, like we started with you could buy hash rate only in auctions. Like we would auction the hash rate and it got really competitive. It got really wild. And so then we brought in the BitAxes, and then eventually we had some issues with the auctions and we took them down because we found that people just wanted to buy hash rate. Like they didn't want to go through the auction thing. The auction thing was too confusing for a lot of people. Although it was fun, the auction days were like the hardcore We were very nerdy in the beginning. And so we finally realized, let's make it super easy for people to just buy hash rate, buy as much as you want, you know? And so then ultimately what we've done is we've made it super easy. And it's like 1100 sats for 42 tera hash. So like anybody can jump in. Of course, right now, this latest party that we're doing, now that we've hit a block, everybody wants in. People are going crazy. There are whale buys galore. Everybody can just come in for 42 tera hash as long as you use your team code. So like for you, if you want to join the party, they can just join code Team Ivy. And then we've got 21 slots and then they're out. So everybody can join in for 42 tera hash for free. Just use the code Team Ivy at your checkout and then you'll have your own team. Anybody who checks out Life with Bitcoin and listens this far and goes, hey, I'm going to use that Team Ivy code and, get into this block party. So that can be fun too. We can see how many Team Ivy folks we got. But, you know, you're not going to get a huge amount of block reward unless you contribute a huge amount of hash rate. And there are people who just don't care. They just want to be a part of the party. They just want to, you know, the bragging rights are cool, you know.
Yeah.
Forever, I'm going to be able to say, I mined block 955703. Me and my 113 friends, me and the Anons, we all mined this block together. It's like forever written in our history. Like,
yeah,
it'll be in the bio. It'll be in everything. So it'll be great.
I know it's all very new. Do you see some sort of difference of how you look at Bitcoin communities mining? Do you see any of these things differently now that have you participated in mining the block?
Yeah, the Bitcoin community is unbeatable. It is just, I know there are different sectors of the Bitcoin community, right? Like, but at the end of the day, we're all Bitcoiners. And I think we all want to do the right thing for Bitcoin, the right thing by Bitcoin. And, you know, obviously that right thing is going to be like decentralization or standing up for wherever you fall in the mining spectrum, what you think is right. You know, that's your node to run. That is, you know, your choice there. And I just think that we're such a strong mining community. The mining folks, like just through the parties, we have people who've helped us out. Like Wayne, a shout out to Wayne at Megawatt in Indiana. There was a party where those guys pointed their hash rate from one of their mining farms at us just to be cool. Like just, here's the address, here's the info, just hook it up, you know, we'll take the hash rate from your mining farm. You know, that's just a community thing. Like somebody just anonymously took the address, plugged it into their mining farm, and like maybe they pumped us some hash for a little while. The mining community, I think, is pretty solid. You would have to be. Mining is so damn hard. Like we're in it to support each other. You know, that's been a really cool thing. And I mean, there's so much community to Bitcoin. Like we've broken up into different communities as well. Like there's the music community, which you're in, Ivy, like the value for value music community. Then there's like the Noster community. You know, there's overlap between them. And then like there's a bunch of us here in Arizona. And we like to get together and hang out. And so some of us are into mining and some aren't. But it's kind of cool what everybody's into and where the overlap is.
Definitely. That's where the magic happens. And I think this is what we kind of need more of is all of these communities, all of these little sub communities and groups, they all have their own way of fascination and they have their group traits where they have qualities, where they have so much to bring just from insights in their areas and what they're building, they're doing. And definitely everybody can benefit from talking about it a bit more, I guess, between each other. For me, at least, I'm not a technical Bitcoiner. I'm not coding or anything in different capacities. So Bitcoin mining, the mining aspect have always been very mysterious for me. I've seen a lot of centralized resources getting pulled into Bitcoin mining. And historically, that has been the case where you have resources naturally gravitating towards different places just because of the nature of Bitcoin mining. But now this is something different. And thanks to you so openly share the story, now more people get to understand this is not the only way to mine Bitcoin. There's a decentralized way because it's like buying a lottery ticket every 10 minutes, right? But the right. It's just like buying a lottery ticket. The chance is so small. But if you get to pull your possibility, a little bit of luck and a lot of karma, perhaps, like a lot of good karma, right? This also goes to show that, you know, like there's a lot of people, there's a lot of work you've done to make this happen. And it doesn't take the first try. It doesn't take the 10 try. It takes the community, it takes the whole community's effort. It takes the passion. It takes your pour, your heart and soul and sats into hope, into more light, into more love, in investing in people and communities getting together. I think that's what the block reward eventually is about. And then this is why, like, this is what makes it so special. What do you think? What's the difference? Or what make you feel instead of having institutional mining farms mine this block? Now you have 100 plebs coming together to mine this block. What do you think it means for Bitcoin, for Bitcoiners, and the community?
That's great. Great question. It's the future. It is that low time preference future, that long term future, where I see a future where maybe the mining party isn't just like whales making the block reward lopsided, for example. Like, we'd love to have 1,000 people in it who are all buying small amounts of hash rate. So, like, more people get a smaller reward. I came into this as not a technical Bitcoiner either. Like, I came into this like, hey, you guys need a marketer? Like, you know, like, I'll learn about Bitcoin mining. Like, then I started learning more of the technical side of it. And I was like, cool, like, that's not for me. But then I got interested in the BitX thing. And I'm like, so I can just like mine from home. Maybe I'll hit a block. Who knows? You know, like, but I can mine from home. I didn't think I could mine from home. I thought I had to have a basement and a big loud miner that would piss off my neighbors. Right. So, like, over time, I think this has become easier. More people have become interested in it. I think more people have become aware of the centralization of mining and that, like, Foundry, man, like, I counted one day specifically. How many blocks did they hit in a 24-hour period? And it was like more than 30. It was an obscene number. It was like, there was pretty much not an hour in a day that they didn't hit a block. Like, they have so much hash rate. They have so much proof of work. I mean, they can just hit and hit because they have so much power, right? And, like, we're not going to make a dent in that with little tiny bit axes, right? Like, but we do make a difference. And then if we keep educating Bitcoiners about just the importance of, yes, put a bit axe in your house. Be a heat punk. You know, if you live somewhere cold, get the heat miner. And, like Heatbit just came out with their launch an air purifier, right? So, like, people like me who live in the desert have a chance to do something, you know, to have another miner running in their house, you know, in addition to, like, the BitX. But it's probably not as hard as most people think. And if you are non-technical and you want to be part of mining a block, by all means, like, YOLO in, buy some hash rate. Just buy 42 terahash, see how it works, you know. The most you're going to lose is sats. I think the future is that every Bitcoiner has something in their house, right? You at least have a node or a Bitcoin miner, or one or both, or, you know, you go back and forth, whatever you've got going, you have the power to participate in Bitcoin, right? Like, right now, you could make your choice between Core and BIP110. If you're running a node, that is your choice, right? I've heard some people say they're going to run one of each, right? Mm-hmm. And that's cool too. Like, that gives you a voice, you know, one CPU, one vote, just as it was intended, right? So that's how we don't need to argue. The community's been arguing about this, you know, what is right and what is wrong, when really, like, there's no argument. Just run your node the way you choose, right? So just do your thing. That's your vote, right? And so in the long run, the future of Bitcoin is that we all remember we have a vote. We have a voice. We make a difference. And yes, it's going to take a lot of little miners to beat the amount of hash rate that these major corporate miners have. But I think it is still important. It's important for us to understand and tinker a little bit as Bitcoiners. Like, you know, self-custody is like the first hurdle. And then maybe, like, you run a node and that's a second hurdle, and then, like, maybe mining is another hurdle. Like, mining has become so much more possible for a person at home who has no technical skills that just do it. You know, just give it a spin. If you hate it, you hate it, you know. Like, those nerd miner v2s, like, I just won one on Twitter, right, from Mana and from Altair Tech, and they're like $45. So if you just want to learn how it works, how to hook up a miner, how to get online with, like, this, it's like the size of my key fob. It is so little and cute. It doesn't have much hash rate, right? So it's not going to make much of a big difference in decentralization of mining. But you are still one person who's just taking a path forward with maybe getting more technical with Bitcoin. And some people do that and they're like, cool, I did it. Great. Got it. Done. Right on. Didn't impress me much. Whatever. And that's fine. And then some people are like, wow, this is rad. I'm going to have 10 bit axes, and that's still not enough. And then you become kind of an addict, right? You make friends, you know, because you need, because you're going to buy a BitX and then you're going to be like, oh my God, how do I hook this thing up? And it's not as hard as you think. You just have to go through it once. Kind of like a node. Like I built a node once and I'm like, this sounds like the hardest thing in the world, but I got my Raspberry Pi. I got my hard drive, set everything up on Umbral. You know, I got through it and I was like, okay, so I learned something here, you know, and they can't take that away from me. Like I did build a node, right? Ultimately like broke it and fried it, but I went through the exercise of doing it. And so I'm like, this makes me a better Bitcoiner. This makes me understand Bitcoin. And I think running a node taught me the experience of being my own bank and seeing what it's like to transfer my Bitcoin at will at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night when the banks are closed and go, oh my God, I have complete total control over this. And also the terror of, I have complete and total control over this, right? So, you know, you have to go through it, I think. It's like a rite of passage in Bitcoin. Maybe there's another area of Bitcoin that interests you, but I think in the long run, like that, my perfect vision is that there's a miner for every Bitcoiner, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, like whatever size you're comfortable with, what your budget allows, time, space, money, etc. You're armed for the future. In such a way that's going to decentralize. Maybe get the heat miner, or if you're in the desert like me, you've got the air purifying miner. You start to just kind of get this collection, and then one day you kind of turn around in your house and you're like, this is a Bitcoiner house, right? Like there's Bitcoin stuff everywhere. Maybe somebody walks in and they don't know. I got this little guy here. This came from BTC Social Co. Like they gave me this for speaking Friday night, and this little guy, like, my normie friends will walk in here and be like, what weird, is that a Yaga thing she's got now? Because, you know, he's a disappearing Satoshi, right? So he's different depending on how you look at him, right?
Yeah.
But like the normie friends and family have no idea, right? Like you start to have kind of like a rack of stuff, you know, like where you have like, no. You have like a nice shelf in your living room, or like, what's that? Is that a Mac Mini? No, that's an Umbral node. Like, you know, and so you start to have like things. And so then you start to go, okay, if the world falls to hell, right? I've got my own bank. I've got a way to mine Bitcoin. I'm still part of the mining community. Maybe I hit a block. Maybe I don't. Maybe it's what I learned along the way. So that's kind of like, that's the future I see, where we're all kind of learning but taking control of what we're doing and contributing to the community in kind of a positive way, where we're just kind of lifting each other up and teaching each other as we go.
And this is right now, this is almost the perfect time. This is no best time to be a Bitcoiner. Like people always say when they first come into space, oh, like late. But at the same time, like think about all of the resources that are available right now that weren't available before. And it's almost like if you want to do anything, like anything to create a new project, any project, any way to provide value, you're going to find some interesting community, interesting information, interesting opportunities that are just like laying there on the internet waiting to be discovered by you and to participate. And it takes only one side quest to change your life, and I'm sure that you have experienced a lot of that. And what really fascinates me of your story is about your border journey too, where it's music, it's radio, it's Noster, it's mining, it's Bitcoin. There seem to be this common thread of curiosity that's in you, the openness that's in you. So let's talk about that. What fascinated you when you were a kid? Growing up,
you know, I think that if you asked my mother, it would have been getting in trouble and being a nonconformist, right? I was a Bitcoiner before I was a Bitcoiner. I was just kind of like, I think as a kid, I was truly a hippie. Like if I could have gone down that path instead of the path that I went down in life, like I was just interested in like nature and writing and poetry. And like, I was like a yoga person before there was yoga, right? Like I didn't find yoga until my teens, right? And so like, to me, like I could never get enough of like books, or like if there was something about like ghosts or energy or haunted houses and witches and stuff, like I was so into that kind of like stuff. And I'm like, looking back, like I was a hippie, man. I was meant to be a yoga teacher, right? Like I had a rock collection as a kid. I would have called it that. But now that I'm older, I'm like, okay, I'm way into crystals and stones and geodes. And, you know, like I'm just a super nerd. And I just, I think I like to know what's underneath things. And that's probably why I liked things like rocks and geodes as a kid. Cause you know, here in the desert, like there's areas you can drive There's a part of Arkansas too where you can like dig for crystals in like the river. God, the places that are just still unspoiled. And like you can really just like pull off a dirt road somewhere and it's kind of sparkly and you're like, what are these rocks? And you kind of go, and these look like if I dropped them really hard, I could crack them open. And you crack open these rough looking rocks and there's this beautiful sparkly like geode inside. Yeah. I think I've just always wanted to find out what was underneath things or find out how things worked or find out what's the next layer of something. And that led to like journalism, and that led to Bitcoin. And like, God, I was just so built to go down rabbit holes. So I was just always meant to get here, you know, and be this like, I don't know, yoga teaching, Bitcoin chick. And then I was like, ooh, mining's a rabbit hole. You know, like people who can combine music and Bitcoin, that's a rabbit hole. So I'm not mechanical, so I'm not literally going to take things apart and see what's underneath. Mm. So I kind of like feel into things. I want to study. I want to learn how things work. I want to just see what's underneath. I want to crack open every ugly rock and find the geode inside, you know.
Has this trait of yours? It's almost like it comes with nature, right? It's almost like you were born this way. Were you ever overwhelmed by the curiosity, by the uncertainty of...
I think that's just how my brain works. I mean, ultimately, did it lead to like alcoholism and drug addiction? Yes, absolutely. Like, you know, and I'm 13 years sober now, so I can laugh at it. But, you know, it's... I have that intense brain. My brain is really going to like dig into something like a dog with a bone. My late mentor... Vic, shout out Victor Fitz, one of the greatest people I worked with in the addiction field, who's no longer with us in Wichita, Kansas. I'll never forget, but I quit my job and I said, you know, Vic, I gotta follow my heart. He's like, yes, I know that you need to do this. You know, I'll miss you, but you know, you gotta do things. He's like, you know, you just want to know things. If you want to run off and like start your own business and make your own way and do that, he's like, you need to, like, you need a break from this. This isn't for you, right? Like, you want to know things so bad. And so like I went off and then kind of went on like a good 7-year journey after that. And then Vic passed a couple of years ago, but he was like, if you don't follow your dream and go after this curiosity that you have.
What do you think is the relationship between people's development and people's past and curiosity? Like, do you think people are intrinsically curious, or it's something that it's a trait? Like, you're either a curious person or you're not.
I think it depends on the person. I think we all have some level of curiosity. Like, I think every human has a level of creativity. And then you're going to meet people who are like, I just don't care. Don't need to go that deep. That's not who I am. I'm not a reader. I don't want to know. So some people are just more than happy to not dig too deep. And that's okay too. Like, it really does take all kinds to make up the world, as my grandmother would have said. But I think there are some of us, and I think Bitcoiners probably share the trait of curiosity and kind of having a curiosity problem. Like, we just want to know. Like, we will get together and have meetups just to talk about, you know, BIP 110. I don't know. Like, we will get together to argue about Bitcoin things, and we will discuss things to death. We will discuss Michael Saylor to death or beat up on him. You get Bitcoiners together and you really find out, you know, one, how intelligent everybody is and how inquisitive everyone is, and just how curious people are about everything, all the aforementioned things. It's just so funny because, you know, I feel like there's two distinct paths in Bitcoin. I think you either become a finance bro or a tech bro. And like, some people are able to do both. And then I think there's kind of like a new, like, maybe emerging Bitcoiner who maybe they're not going to be curious. You know, maybe they're just going to come here and go like, what is this about? What are you people doing? You know, like, why Bitcoin? Why are you guys so in love with this money? I think over time, it's going to just become something people have to be curious about, because now you're seeing, like, at least in the U.S., I'm seeing some of these banks start to talk about it more. Maybe they're not doing it in the most responsible way. I have a bank that loves to send me push notifications about crypto, so it's not Bitcoin centered. But people are talking about these things in a way that I'm seeing people become more curious. So I'm going, okay, well, how are these new Bitcoiners going to emerge? Are they going to be as informed as we were? Because I mean, there's so much Bitcoin content out there. There's so many rabbit holes to go down. I think that which is great. Like, keep it coming, because you got to reach people somehow.
Yeah. Totally.
You really got to connect people to people that look like them, to people who talk like them. And, you know, it can't all be tech bros and finance bros. Like, we need to see real people. we need to see people that look like whoever we're related to. My family's biracial, and I know that my niece and nephew, if they're going to believe me because I'm their aunt, but they're also going to believe people who look more like them, especially Gen Z. I mean, Gen Z is hardcore skeptic about things. Like my generation, I think we're just coming along, like waking up. Like Gen X, we were the slackers, and now we're like, you know, whipped awake, like, whoa, what did the boomers do to us? And everyone behind us, like, we gotta fix this, man. Like us middle-aged folks, like, we're like, hey, let's do our part here, because we were coasting through the 90s, through the 2000s, through the 20s. We, you know, something about 2020, I think, woke us all up. And so I think the newer Bitcoiners, we need some new blood. We need a more broad, diverse group of Bitcoiners who maybe they're not here for finance. Maybe they're not here for tech. Maybe they're here for something else. And I think we really need to hone in on that, you know, because this economy is just bananas.
Yeah.
And so people are looking into, you know, as I did when I came to Bitcoin, I was like, where's the escape hatch? In 2020, I dabbled with buying Bitcoin and didn't understand it. And so in 2020, I started like really like mainlining the Max and Stacy podcast and like things like that. Try to figure out, like, they're talking about something that really appeals to me and I need to go deeper here. I don't know if every future Bitcoiner is going to be like that. I think in the future, it's going to be about utility. How do I buy it?
Yeah.
How do I get it? How do I get more of it? How do I save it? How do I protect it? How does it work for me in the long term, especially if you're Gen Z? This is a low time preference revolution. So those, I feel like that's the generation that's really gonna benefit.
I don't hold any hard feelings towards boomers, Gen X, and like, I don't, because I feel like every generation has their lessons to carry, their tasks, and they were having different restraints, and they were just individuals trying to do their best, having a good life, like just like every one of us in their generation and in that context. But I do feel like the next generation of Bitcoiner is probably not gonna care about the finance aspect or tech aspect of it, and this is why, like, big life with Bitcoin, we've been around for 3 years now from June, and I think this is one of the first kind of podcast that focused on the personal stories. And back then I was like, I wanted to make the stories timeless, because it's exactly like what you said. We need people to hear from people who are like them. And if you are a parent and then you are thinking about how can I optimize for my parents, for my kids' future, for my family's future, and then you see these parents are Bitcoiners and they have done it away, so on and so forth. So we demonstrate that there is a better way to do it. There's more connected, healthier way to do it with more love, more hope, and everybody get to benefit from that process. So it's definitely up to us to create these type of content. And this started to resonate even more so after I joined the music community on Noster, be more community driven with Bitcoin and trying to bring everything together. And I see this is the way, because we need to make Bitcoin relatable again. We talk about it like they don't see eye to eye, but if you think about it, we were once not Bitcoiners. We came from somewhere. And the fact that we are all humans, that transcend race, that transcend gender, that transcend age, and transcend where you come from. And because we come together for love, we come together for hope, we come together for these things. And then hopefully in that realm, right? Hopefully in that realm, with more positivity next to you, you will realize, oh, it's a means to an end. And there's the other flip side of it, is to make it about stacking sats only, not living your life, which I think you're not falling in that trap because you're living fully.
Right.
Because you have so many other aspects of you long before Bitcoin. You have this continuous passion for music. So let's talk about music.
Yes.
With your years of listening experience, with your experience interacting with artists in all capacities, what has music taught you about people?
Oh my gosh, what a great question. Music is like the perfect part of our lives, right? You know this because you're such a creative soul and you're such a wonderful musician. Like it is the perfect part of life, is emotion, it's energy, like a fingerprint, you know, like every song to me is like a fingerprint, like it's a different energy, you know. There's a song for literally everything, right? Like it's endless human creativity, you know. You can never write the same song twice, and you're never going to be the same person twice. Like everything has just this unique fingerprint, you know. It's the same as if you write a poem, if you write a song, you know, you're creating something that is in its own experience, just this perfection. Like the best part, like, of life is being able to relate to another human being. And you see that when songwriters will write a song and, you know, the fans will love it and it will mean something different to every single person. It means one thing to the songwriter, and you can have like thousands of fans who love this song and everyone hears and feels something different. It means something different. It reminds them of the best or worst time in their life. It's just the creativity that we experience soul to soul. I mean, there's no replacement for it. You can try with AI to make something that is the same, and you might make something impressive, but it just doesn't have that like human fingerprint to it.
Why do you think music creates connection so naturally? Like, what about it?
You know, it creates community, right? Like look at Taylor Swift, you know, to pick on one of the most famous people in the world. Her fans have created their own culture, you know, their own world, their own, like, it's just like to pay $750 and wear a certain outfit to a show. They find each other, and like Deadheads, right? To pick on another like famous example, you know, there was a time when people could just follow the Grateful Dead around the country, and like everywhere you go, you had a friend, you had a fellow Deadheads, and they just got you, right? You go to a Taylor Swift show, your fellow Swifties, they've just got you. And why is that in music? Like we connect on this emotional level, you know, like music hits our nervous system. You have a bad day, there is a multitude of things you can do to reduce your anxiety, right? And music is one of those things. Like that is medicine.
Yeah.
And so like we naturally can create community through the music that we love. Like we can bond as Ivy Lumi fans. Like we, you know, like wherever I go, I can find other, you know, Ivy Lumi fans who are going to know the words to the songs that I love as well. And I mean, that's powerful. Yeah. You know, you can be having the worst day on the planet. You listen to your favorite song for 3 minutes. You know, this is why I always say make songs longer. You know, have that nice experience where you can absolutely reset your life, set yourself, change up your day on a cellular level. Because of sound. That's why we in yoga, we love sound healings. You know, like artists like Helene, you know, they have healing music, you know, and I could argue all music is healing, you know, even metal, you know, those sometimes you need to scream it out, right? So you're going to scream along with your favorite metal song, and you go to a metal show and you find your fellow metalheads. And it's just like music is like going to the bar. That's the alcoholic side of me. Sometimes you want to go where everyone knows your name. There's something that brings us together. Mm-hmm. Through music, through sound. And like I've seen that so much in the music business where you watch how fans relate. People get to meet a favorite artist, and that's like the biggest moment of their life. Like that's people used to, it doesn't matter now, but people used to camp out for concert tickets. Like we used to camp out in a sleeping bag, get in a line to get like a lotto ticket number to go like to a physical location to buy tickets. Because if you didn't do that, you weren't going to get a ticket. We didn't have apps on our phones to buy concert tickets. And then, you know, you're kind of in community there. You're with, you know, your fellow folks who are crazy enough to camp out at night to get those Tori Amos tickets. That's what I used to do anyway.
To be honest, I'm a little bit jealous of that because it's such an experience to be so emotionally and physically invested because you have to travel to places. And I kid you not, there's so many great conversations I've had and just waiting in line for something.
Right. Like that's how you just like randomly meet people, like talk to people like in line for your driver's license. I don't know. But like there's something that we have lost because we are so online, and that you don't go to the record store anymore the day the music comes out to buy the album. You know, you don't stand in line to get the tickets. You know, your only true experience of the music, you know, listening on your phone or listening in your car or whatever, you're having an intimate listening experience. Or you're at a bar, a nightclub, you're at a concert hall, you're at a stadium, and you're seeing that music live. You're getting to experience music live. You're like literally feeling the vibration coming through the speakers. Like that experience to me, it feels like it's slipping away because live music is not what it was. It's a struggle out there, you know, and unless you're going to see these major touring artists, like I bought tickets last year to go see Rustin Kelly, who I'm a big fan of. And I was so excited to go. I was going to make my friend Phil go with me and everything, dragging him along. And the show happened to be on Super Bowl Sunday. So then, like, the tickets didn't sell and the show got canceled. And I'm like, I haven't seen him yet. When is my next chance to see Rustin Kelly? And I mean, that's just like one story of like, gosh, even if you buy the tickets to see your artist, I'm a huge fan. Like, I still may not be guaranteed a show. It's kind of like Bitcoin mining all over again. Like, just because you make the effort doesn't mean in the end you actually get to go. It's just so like devastating for a fan. So like someday, Rustin, I'm gonna see it, but it hasn't happened yet. But we, like, we kind of have to protect musicians, you know, like we kind of have to protect you guys so you can keep creating. We have to keep protecting the live music scene. Like, we have to keep going to shows. Whoever's playing this weekend in your neighborhood, like, go pay the cover charge, go see them, you know, like we've got to support or it goes away. Like, if we stop being fans, if we stop consuming music and, you know, if we stop supporting the artist, it's going to dry up and you will only have like the people who are famous on TikTok. You know, you only have Chappell Roan and Taylor Swift for your pop music. You know, you're only going to have the stadium touring level famous artists.
Yeah.
And I don't want that world. I want the Ivy Loomies. I want independent music to make it. And I know that I am just a very small part of trying to make that happen. And it is like pulling teeth. It is so hard to, you know, one, people aren't aware of the problem. You know, people aren't aware of how buried your music is when it comes to Spotify and Apple, but that you can walk into the Bitcoin community, put your music on something like Wavelake and Fountain and get on Noster or get on Bitcoin Twitter or whatever, wherever you choose to go, Bitcoiners are probably or should be likely to listen and be like, oh, who is this artist? I can pay her in Bitcoin. What? I can send her a zap on Oster. There are so many ways for people to get in touch with you, and you're probably more accessible to them, obviously, than Taylor Swift is, you know, like, but, you know, and it's funny because like you made a Geyser campaign a while back and you weren't even asking for that much money, you know, and you obviously like got your campaign going and made it happen, and that's so cool. And the way you've collaborated with Helene and just the way you collaborate in the space is great, because you got to get yourself out there. Like, you got to create, you got to put out work, you know, that's like breathing, right? You've got to put out your creative work and you got to get people involved, and we got to get people to know that like, this girl's making awesome music, and like, you're making videos. I mean, you've got songs, you're making videos, you're still putting out songs, and your message of love is so great. And you're such a diamond in the rough. Like, Bitcoin is so much more than just, you know, the number stuff. It is so much more than people arguing about mining. It is so much more than even us nerds hitting a block, right? There are people who are creating on Bitcoin in so many ways. You know, like Need Creations, for example. He's Need Creations everywhere. He's a teacher by trade, but he wants to do some Bitcoin education. He's just a gifted teacher, right? A really nice person. I haven't met him, but I've heard he's really nice. And like, he's creating Bitcoin education. Like, he's putting that out in the world. You, man like Quex, Ainsley Costello, people who are like, hey, I am a musician first. Like, Noah Grumman told me that. Noah Grumman from Stardust. I was a music maxi first, and that led me to Bitcoin. But none of you are trying to like approach this from the Bitcoin angle. You were all amazing musicians first who said, here is an avenue where I can get paid and I can kind of control a little more what I have and how I put it out there, and that people will actually see it, and it's not going to get buried in like big tech algorithms like Spotify or Twitter and whatever. Like this kind of gives me half a chance, right? If I put my music on Fountain, and yes, it's going to be a very Bitcoin centric audience if it's Fountain, if it's Wavelake or things like that, or if like it's like Epic Music, right? Ainsley Costello's mom made Epic Music because she just saw a need, like, hey, we need a music app for independent artists for discovery, and you know, it maybe doesn't lead with really nerdy stuff. You know, maybe Epic Music is going to, you know, try to bring artists in, you know, in kind of a little more, I don't know, sneaky way. Is that the right way to say it? But like bringing people into where they just kind of get the idea of the training wheels, if you will, of like the value for value principle of giving out value, getting value
starts
back. And so
why?
Maybe what you start with, sadly, is fiat. Because you know, this is a new idea for people, this value for value. I mean, it's been around for 20 years. Shout out to Adam Curry for being the podfather and creating all of this so that we could all sit here today and keep hacking away at it, keep trying to create and put music out there and, I don't know, shake hands and kiss babies, essentially, right? We're essentially just trying to get it out there. Like, look at how many great musicians would love to receive your Bitcoin if you like their song. You know, it's that simple. And so maybe the training wheels right now is saying, hey, just give an artist a dollar, right? Like Tidal did that, right? Where like you can pay through Cash App on Tidal to independent artists, right? So that's like a training wheels thing. Julie Costello, shout out to Julie. She just thought, like, what if we make a music experience where people can experience independent artists served up to them like Instagram stories? Instead of just thumbing through Instagram stories, you're thumbing through songs. So you can just kind of like try a song on it and discover music that way. Because what we become attuned to is we can have all of the mainstream music we want in the world for $16 a month, you know, or whatever it is. Your mileage may vary. You know, Apple Music, Spotify, Tidal, etc. Probably, we'll say $16 a month, right? So then my music diet, maybe I'm happy with that, but there's so much more out there that I'm not aware of because it's not being fed to me. Like Spotify, or like I use Apple Music, so Apple Music is not feeding me Ivy Lumi, but I discovered you. Because you're part of the Bitcoin community. So there are a lot of Bitcoiners, like shout out to my friend DJ Val. You know, I think Val would be into anything and anybody if you said, Val, they're a Bitcoiner. Val, so into music. And she has supported Value for Value as well. We're all just kind of here spread out through the online world. And every once in a while, we get to do an in-person show. Every once in a while, like Noah Grumman was in Vegas. Well, James was in Vegas. And, you know, Ainsley Costello has played all over now. D.C., you know, she's based in Nashville. She just did Camp Nakamoto, played in New Hampshire on this gorgeous island in the middle of the lake and got to do, like, music summer camp. You know, essentially with like a really small group of really good, like 150 Bitcoiners at Camp Nakamoto. And that's so cool. So we've kind of been able to bring the music to like small microcosms of Bitcoiners, small gatherings. Like the Vegas show's probably been the biggest one I've done. Like where we'll have like Sarah Jade do a show, you know, with like the Groom Man was out there, Abel James, like I mentioned, and the Higher Low, right? And so like, you know, like that was a great show. And then we had Tatum Turnip upstairs doing the DJing. So we hit that Bitcoin audience. But usually the shows can be a lot smaller. The first time Sarah Jade played with me here in Phoenix was early 2024. Don't think at one time we had more than 30 people in the room. We had Bitcoiners who like come and go. So like people would like literally drive up from the middle of nowhere, off grid people who are like, hey, I just wanted to pop in and say hello. You know, but super small audience. And even then, value for value, she was able to make like $100 at the time worth of Bitcoin for like 30 minutes of playing her original songs. Like, how often do you get to do that? You know, like, you know, usually you're slaving away, doing the cover band, Saturday night, you're not playing your own music. You know, you're doing the cover band thing. Or you see people on TikTok, they're on a keyboard, and they're playing songs and they're taking requests. Okay, like TikTok is great at this. I'm almost jealous in a way, right? Because we've been harping on this, you know, Valueverse thing. Send your sad up your send your Bitcoin to the artist. It's like your TikTok, it has its own currency. I don't get it, because it's gonna be like little animated things show up on the musician's head, like, you know. And so people buy into this, and then they send these gifts, and it looks absolutely absurd. But you see these artists on TikTok, and they're just like, it's like a piano bar kind of feeling.
This is where I'm very bullish on Noster, because what's the missing thing is the adoption, right? But once people realize that you can do the same thing, like support your favorite artist through Noster with real value, not some popped up 2D
not like fake TikTok
on the
currency.
Screen.
I know,
right? Like
it's
it
so
doesn't
like.
It's cringe. It's cringe.
And it's very obnoxious.
Yeah, yeah. So they realize that what Noster enables, and once we make sure that when you land on there with whatever reason and you're here, you stay because of the creators. We should make sure that the creators gets featured, and when they find their way to Noster, they get immediately interacting with the community. And this is where I can definitely attest me being a new independent artist because I came into the Bitcoin space first, and then I worked in Bitcoin space for years, and then went with tons of interesting roles, side quests. One side quest after another, I find myself writing songs because of my love stories. Then I found Noster as a platform to share this journey, to build in public, and then the engagement or the support or the level of visibility I'm getting as an artist on Noster is very unmatched with everywhere else. Because there's no reach. People don't know you already exist, and the feed is so saturated. And I definitely remember these days, like years, even decades of listening to independent musicians on some sort of independent website where they just uploaded for free. Like I was those listeners growing up listening to these songs, and I think looking back, like those were important factors that contributed to me being able to hear these melodies, to capture them in a way that's not tinted by what's going on in the mainstream music industry. So I really feel like a part of that was really coming from the specific avenues where I seeked out the listening experience that's a little bit different from what you might find elsewhere, right? So as a creator yourself, you're very much bringing people together, creating content and shining light on individual creators and having a lot of experience on the Valueverse. What do you think? What does receiving sats feel like that a like never could?
You know, you don't get tired of receiving sats. You know, you don't get tired of seeing, if you have notifications on your phone, like you don't get tired of getting a zap or receiving sats. Because, you know, once you're a Bitcoiner, it's like, how do I get more Bitcoin, right? But I think it's the gesture that matters. You know, when somebody sends you some Bitcoin, like that's true love, right? Somebody's listening in an app to music and like sending a zap to an artist. Like, I feel like as a fan, like if I get on Wavelake and I the other day, like sent Alicia Stockman some sats just because she's got some new music on Wavelake. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize she had new music out. Like, oh, wow. Hey, look what's here. It's like, it's exciting. And then I'm like, she's going to see the sats I send. Like, because you're undoubtedly, you're going to keep track of the Bitcoin you receive. Like, even at some point, like, you're going to check that wallet and you're going to see that little message there where I just like say something like, I love your song, you know, because I'm just such a fangirl. And so I'm like, okay, she's actually going to see this. Like she's going to know, you know, when people listen to your music, right? Like, you know, you're getting listens, you know, somebody's listening, but knowing that like maybe a certain person, you know, because that's the other thing too, is like, if you see the zap came from Ivy, you know, like if I see that you listen to Radio Detox and I got a zap, or, you know, and I see it came from me, I'm like, oh, she listened, you know, so there's like a personalization to it. Now, I have since taken Radio Detox out of the Valueverse, right? So I actually backed away from it, and because I kind of looked at the numbers and went, okay, looked at the amount of time I have to work on it. And it was really labor intensive. And I was getting like, I was probably spending $100 a month on all the software. And then I was getting like $13 back. And the majority of that was always coming from the same person. So it doesn't feel, for me as a podcaster anyway, I don't feel like the audience is there yet. I don't feel like it's ready. Yeah. I was like, look, I gave it 2 years. I will happily come back. But right now it's like a really time consuming thing to make music podcasts with all of the wallet switching and then picking out the songs. I'm like, this is really labor intense and I hate to leave. However, if I want to get this message that musicians are earning Bitcoin and that there is an avenue to do this and that we have built rails to do this, I feel like video is the best way to go right now. And doing the mainstream thing, like I put Radio Detox on a regular RSS feed and I'm just going to do video and it's just going to be me talking to artists like yourself, you know, talking to different artists and just highlighting it in video because I hate it. But this is what people are conditioned to. This is what social media feeds them, is video.
Yeah, I totally see the trade-offs there. And I have my own confession to make. Last week, I registered a Facebook account for Ivy.
Right, because you want to reach people. And that's what Noster lacks right now. And I've seen it time and time again. An artist, like a new independent artist who's brilliant and gifted and just talented and wonderful personality. Like Matthias McIntyre is a good example of that. Came on last August, hosted content. content like every day of August, got like 480 followers, whatever it was on Noster. And then he kind of bounced. And I've seen that with several artists. They get on Noster, they don't last. They bounce because, well, they don't want to be on social media anyway. First of all, but we just don't have the network effect. So like, I get it. You're going to still, something's got to give. You got to be on Facebook. You got to be on Instagram. You got to be everywhere.
Yeah.
So you only have so much time in the day to promote your music on social media. What are you going to do? You're going to go where the people are.
I think for me, the way it's still to go full on Noster. But the lesson here is that I need to be everywhere and have a minimum presence so that I can tell people exclusives are on Noster. So if they see me, so that's what I'm trying to do. You will see me increasingly more active on X, increasingly trying to drive traffic here and there. And then because before I was, for the past year, I think for the entire journey of Ivy Lumi, I was very much exclusively on Noster. I think for me, the community really backed me. Like I've really felt supported. Like you, Heather, you're a really big part of that. So I'm really, really thankful for all of your support from you and your communities. And there's so many, I guess, advocates on in this space for V4V music and out of their own love for music. So I do feel very supported and grateful for this community, but I also see the need that more people should be here, right? And
Like,
see people like fight about, oh, use my client, I have this client. And yes, we need clients, we need different functionalities, but ultimately people are going to be creator driven. Because if you have some content that I want to see, even if you're not the best relay, even if you're not the best platform, I'm going to...
Because nobody cares about the tech.
It's not about you. It's not about you. Yeah. It's about the content, right? So I think people will come to that realization once they have their project going on and they will realize, oh, I need content now. Like, I think it's a phase thing. So I'm just trying to stay zen and stay on the creation mode and then build in public. And I'm really resonating with that community aspect of I want to be emotionally invested with an artist, right? As a fan, as a listener, you want to be involved in their journey too. So you take on something that's bigger than you. So I'm coming from not a musical background, and I'm like writing songs in the past like 2-3 years. It's still very, very young. New artist in the space, and I'm making mistakes, and I'm not afraid of making mistakes and practicing in public to show that I'm not there yet. I was like, I'm taking my dancing lessons because now the music video is coming up. I want to be bringing on some choreography into the music video to create for the audience and to try different things. And I want to like be doing live streams in the dancing class.
Oh, that's awesome.
And show a little bit of this is what I've got after 45 minutes, and we're going to come up with that. So thank you for being part of this journey. I'm trying to create the world where people can actually participate. And this is why the CDs, why the campaigns with the pins is to create these artifacts to remind people that love is indeed the cure. Because I do come from the Bitcoin realm first, and I realized that everybody is so traumatized. Like, it breaks my heart to see, and everybody is sad or angry or both, like traumatized for different reasons. And music, it's such a great way to feel first. You feel so much to the point that you heal. The song can be a token, like an artifact of souvenir. It can be a scar. It can be something that you hold dear for your own journey. It can mean different things to people. And the participation aspect is beautiful. So from your experience, being the listener, being the one who curate experience, how do you think we're moving from consumers to becoming participants of culture, community?
God, that's such a good question. Like, I think at some point for me, I realized, like, do I want to just be a consumer my whole life? You know, do I just want to be a listener? Or do I have something in me that's creative? You know, and I think, like, I've had, like, many blogs over the years. And I was like, do I spend more time blogging? Or do I spend more time, like, consuming, reading, like, and it can go into like, look, we all do it, right? Like, we all sit and watch something on TV, you know, like that's, we get into that where like, I just don't think as a human being, there's a balance. Like if all you're doing is watching, like if all you're doing is like binge watching shows and like, I get it. Like if you love TV and movies and that's your wheelhouse, like that's what makes you happy, like good for you. But it can't be good to always be the consumer. Like there has got to be a balance where you put something back. Mm-hmm. Like you've got to share your talent with the world. And I think that comes so easy for us who are creatives, and like not everybody sees themselves as a creative. At some point you've got to cross that bridge and go, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stop being 100% of a consumer. And like, I'm going to put myself out there. I am going to put my creative work into the world, whether it's writing, whether it's music, whether it's film, whether it's like teaching yoga, I mean, like, or writing Bitcoin content. A lot of people out there love to write Bitcoin content. So there's got to be a point where you cross that bridge and you believe in yourself and your self-worth and your worth as an artist or creative, however you want to put it. You've got to believe that what you have to share is valuable and that you can't keep it unless you give it away. You've got to put it out into the world. And part of that is immortality, right? Whatever I put out into the world is going to be there, especially in this digital age, it's going to be there, you know, for my niece and nephew's kids, you know, my daughter's kids. They will consume that later. Oh my God. So in my family, somebody just digitized all of the home movies from like 25 years ago. Wow. This is back when Aunt Heather was in her partying heyday. And now the kids are that age and they're like, I watched a video of you dancing at mom's wedding. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm mortified. It's your immortality, but it's something that you put out into the world. It's like, one, you never know where it's going to lead, right? You never could have told me 25 years ago that the kids would be watching me be silly at, you know, their parents' wedding. Like life comes at you fast, but like you are putting something into the world that could be timeless. Yeah. You know, like, no, your music can outlast you. This is amazing. And it's a drop in the bucket, right? Like you also inspire other people to go, you know what? She did it. I'm going to pick up a microphone too. I'm going to sit down and get some studio time. I'm going to write a song. I'm just going to do it because Ivy did it. You know, she made me see that I could stop consuming and start creating. So like, we're here to inspire each other. You know, we're just, but a part of it is self-belief.
A lot of self-esteem. A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah. You really, it takes a lot of balls, man. It takes so much courage to put yourself out there, even just to write a tweet for some people. Some people cannot be online. Some people are like happy to lurk. And it's like, dude, you're brilliant. You need to tweet more. You know, you need to write more. You need to talk more on spaces. I don't know. But like, there's so many brilliant people in Bitcoin who like, maybe they're not the biggest voices in Bitcoin. And like, I don't know why that is, because they're great. And there's so many great, great Bitcoiners out there who like probably could stand to say more. And then there's probably some who could say less, too, you know, but like you just got to step forward and do it. You know, like the world needs your gifts. I'm a firm believer in that. You know, God has gifted you something that is amazing that only you have. And you've got to share that with the world. You just have to, even if you think I'm not creative or nobody wants to hear it. BS. Somebody out there is going to appreciate what you have to give. And I think that's like the rent we pay on this earth, is we have to participate. We have to. Like it makes the world a better place if we all do. It's just, it makes life more interesting, less dreary. Bitcoiners are great at that. We find the courage to do it, right? To, you know, like my friend Sam made these shirts. You know, they became a part of Bitcoin history, and you know, Lightning Store has gone offline for now. But I mean, this is like one of the things that he's made so many great things. But this is one of the things that, you know, it'll always be there. We'll always have the memories of the Satoshi shirts. You know,
in the end, it's the life with Bitcoin, that the life itself that Bitcoiners choose to walk, and this is in a lot of ways our choice. So it's a really great inspiration, Heather, to see you really unapologetically live your life, be so curious and be so straightforward about your passion, and be so courageous about sharing them with everyone, and give shout outs to creators and help them grow in their own way. This is ultimately one of the most rewarding aspects of doing what we do, being a Bitcoiner and then share about it and then actively participating in the culture beyond being a consumer. Because if you're just huddling, in a way, you're a consumer, right? It's somewhat transactional. But if you're participating in the culture, actively living your life on the Bitcoin standard, then it's really something that's exponential, inspiring, and transformational. And this has been proven to so many Bitcoiners, at least for all of them that I can test have been on this show before. Everybody's life have been changed by Bitcoin, and we hold the key. We hold the key to that. And then it's for the first time, Bitcoin is giving individual chances to really level up from their creativity, from their unfair advantage. And there's really no more excuses right now with the tools and information and resources that's available to us for each individual. So it's really the best time to create, to participate, to be curious about anything, really. So for those of whom who are looking to start something, to start looking up something, start trying something, start being creative on something, what would be one thing, one tip that you wanted to share that helped you, that you think can help them?
It's just put yourself out there. You got to do it. I think the scariest thing is you really think that, like, oh God, nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to listen. And then you realize, oh, maybe somebody does. And it's always like the people who kind of like become your audience, not always the people you would expect, you know, and that's kind of how relationships start to get built. Don't rob yourself of that, like, one-to-one fan relationship. You know, that's so precious. And so, like, we're all looking for that connection, I think, more than ever, you know, because the world is kind of weird right now. It's tough out there for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's going to continue, I think, to get worse with the inflation. And, of course, Bitcoiners know it's not going away. And we really need to connect on a human level. So just don't be afraid to do that. Like, if you're a writer, like I do, one of the many things I do, it's not just about putting the words on the page. It's about that person who needs it. The person who needs to read that. You just got to have that human connection. And it's in this age of AI slop, right? Don't forget that, like, humans need you to be human and connect to them and show, like, your human, emotional, like, relatable side. Like, that, I think that is so going to be so much more important over time as the world kind of goes through what Bitcoiners know it's going to go through. You know, don't forget to keep that warmth there and don't be afraid.
That's a perfect note to end this conversation on. And Heather, thank you so much for sharing your experience. I catch you in a very interesting time. So glad to be a part of your journey in that process and document this very special moment for you and 140 people.
That's 113,
130 people that participated in this experience, and then more to come in the future.
Yes, it's an exciting time. You're the first podcast I've been on since we mined a block, and it was so great. We'll do it again.
Thank you so much for your support personally for Ivy Lumi too. And it's definitely been a pleasure and new experience coming out as Ivy Lumi, as an independent artist, independent musician. And I've been receiving so much love and kindness and support in that process. Stay tuned of what's to come. Lots of new development on the music side too in the coming months and years. And I'm super bullish on the community. And every day, my heart is more warmed to see more people joining in, more people start sharing, and more people starting to explore their own way of creativity. Either it's inspired by music, or inspired by Bitcoin, or inspired by whatever. But the subcultures, the subgroups, the fascinating things are always sometimes in the details, and now it's time we bring everybody together and all have a blast.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to seeing you dance. That's going to be fun. That's coming. Yes. Thank you, Ivy.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Live with Bitcoin. I'm your host, Ivy Lumi, and we'll see you in the next one.